of Christ Jesus. Amen.
Okay. So here we go. A little sharing tonight. Who's this guy?
Benjamin.
Okay, little strokes fell great oaks. That came from his Poor Richard's Almanac, which those things I love. Benjamin Franklin had so many cool little stories. But what's the point of that? That even something mighty can be taken down by continually being picked at or chopped at. So it's kind of a focus or a little bit of a start off here for what we're going to be looking into. So here's something that's kind of cool. It's come up here very recently. This was from July, late July. Okay, no surprise to us, but when we look at it, mathematical challenges to Darwin. Okay, they just had four or five guys that are all doctorates. Geologist, mathematician, cell biology, all these guys sat down to come up and determine that there's no way that Darwin's stuff could be true. Yeah, really? Okay. Did you also discount, you know, the Easter Bunny or any of those things like that while we were at it? But we know this, but what's happening is this. The significance of this is so much of the progressive agenda. This is their cornerstone. This is the cornerstone. And so the people are already trying to, wait a minute, they're trying to combat this. These guys are like going, yeah, there's zero chance, absolutely zero chance of Darwinism. And so when you go through this, it's kind of, all right, this is also a blowback against some of those things. And a couple of the things, the key notes that came from this, Meyer explains Darwinism as a comprehensive synthesis, which gained popularity for its appeal. He also mentions that one cannot disregard that Darwin's book was based on facts present in the 19th century. Now that catches me off guard. Facts are different in the 19th century than they are in the 20th century? Are they different than they were in the 18th century? I mean, does that make any sense?
No.
Are facts based on what year we're in? I'm like, well, that just blows me away. So it's one of those things that we're trying to protect. The facts are facts. It doesn't matter what century they came out of. Theories. Big difference in facts. Okay, intelligent design is something only Myers agreed with, this guy above, but with some of the others, the scientific approach, one can agree or disagree, but should not reject it, talking about intelligent design. Meyer talked about the discovery in the 50s and 60s, talking about DNA, somewhat digital format, if you go down there to the bottom. Okay, he argues that if there was an intelligent designer, then why is the design not most efficient, rather than prone to all the sorts of problems, including what?
Mental
and emotional. And I'm like going, stand behind me, Satan. That's exactly what Satan said. Hey, take this away from them. Don't give them these ideas. Don't let them pick. They will become robots. We'll make them do. Okay, this is exactly right. Yeah, when you see that, I'm like going, yep, I'm exactly right. Exactly right. We're right on line there. And the last part of this here that I thought was kind of interesting is, how difficult, this is from their report, how difficult will it be for scientists to move from Darwin's theory of evolution? Will each scientist need to examine the evidence for his or herself? There are some of the most important questions facing science in the 21st century. Okay, well they just proved it. They just proved it. All of them came in agreement it was impossible. Okay, but now they're still trying to, well, what do we do now? And so again, the adversary is building his walls and his fortress on lies, okay, while Christ was the cornerstone building things on truth, okay? And they're going to be opposite. They're going to be opposing each other. So, DNA, this was kind of a neat thing from it that was kind of cool. DNA was not discovered when Darwin wrote his books. On its side, if it were 2 feet high, the human hair in scale would be 32,000 feet high, and 100 miles long. That's how minuscule the DNA is, okay, that they didn't know. Now, here was kind of odd about this. So, facts that have changed over time, okay, and I kind of use that as a joke. It's more of a punchline, okay? Worshipping the big yellow thing in the sky would bring prosperity, okay? Hey, if you bow down to this thing every day, it'll come back up tomorrow. And it did! Hey, look, see? It works! All right? Yes, but this was facts. Flat Earth. Big Bang Theory, which was a joke. The Big Bang Theory was a mocking of these guys who initially came up with it. They made fun of him, and that was a derogatory statement, the Big Bang Theory. That's what they called them. Oh, you guys are the Big Bang Theory. And they made fun of them and laughed at them, okay? Global cooling, global warming. We've seen that over the last, 50 years, what's taken place, where one's going to be one. And these are facts. These are no longer disputed. Darwin's theory, again. And is a fact always a fact? That's where it always comes back down to. Okay? We discovered fill in the blank. Okay? So I always laugh when they, you know, they would send one of those deep submersibles down and they would find something. Look what we discovered. You know, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, because you haven't ever seen it before does not mean it didn't exist. Okay? Because you didn't know that the Earth was in orbit and it went around the sun instead of the other way around did not mean that it was different. It's always been that way. It's always been a fact. Now we discover those, hey, this is what it actually is, but a fact is a fact, and us discovering something doesn't change it. The science is way behind Yahweh. Now it agrees with Yahweh, okay, but it, just because we catch up to it doesn't mean that it hasn't always been there. A fact is always a fact. Okay? And I thought this was kind of neat here on Wikipedia. A fact is a thing known to be consistent with objective reality. That, to start with, makes me laugh. Okay? Objective reality.
Yeah.
And can be proven to be true with evidence. The usual test for the statement of facts is verifiability, if you will, if that's how you pronounce it. That is whether it can be demonstrated to correspond to experience. Stanford's reference works often use the check facts. So what we're looking at is the objective reality. Okay, well, there's going to be things that are going to come about where people are going to see something, and it's going to be a fact that there's going to be a time where the adversary is going to have a lot of control and do some incredible things on this earth that people are going to witness, and people seeing that are going to be like, well, we just saw this. It's a fact. He must be the person we're supposed to bow down to. Okay, and so this is where we have to separate the differences between them. So let's start off here in Isaiah 5. Can you see the TV okay, Aaron?
Yeah.
Page 652. And if somebody would read that to me, read that for me once we get to it. 652, Isaiah 5, verses 20 through 24.
Alas, for them who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Alas for them who are wise in their own eyes and in their own sight are prudent. Alas for them who are heroes to drink wine and men of valor to mingle strong drink, who justify the lawless for a bribe, whereas the righteous of the righteous they take from him. Therefore, as a tongue of fire eateth up straw, and a flame reduceth dry grass to powder, their root like rottenness shall become, and their blossom like dust shall ascend, because they refuse the law of Yahweh of hosts, and the utterance of the Holy One of Israel they despise.
That's it. That's it. All summed up right there. Because why? They refuse the law of Yahweh. Okay? And this is what we're going to see. And this is where it's a constant battle to continue the law of Yahweh. So, as we look at this here, wicked are found to be most perverse, things that can do to prevent truth and rebel against Yahweh, and they spit in the face of the creator of the earth, of Yahweh. Okay, and always standing against righteousness. It's almost like a magnet. One is attracts, the other one repels. Okay, they're completely opposites from them. And this is what we look at. So when we put in here this is some of the notes that as I was pulling through here. Puts darkness for light. Darkness in the scriptures is an emblem of ignorance, error, false doctrine, and crime. Now, as we look through here, and you can kind of think about what takes place in the world today of what is undisputed fact. Okay? Oh no, the debate's over. Debate's over. Debate's over when somebody else says it's over because we don't want to hear anything more. Well, then all of a sudden, as soon as the debate's over, well then that makes it fact. And how convenient that is. And so we fight against this all the time. Light in this scripture denotes truth, knowledge, and piety. sin is bitter, where virtue or holiness is sweet. Okay, and the world will tell you the exact opposite of that. And this is where we see it. This is, I mean, you think about how you know, Isaiah, how old this scripture is, how many generations, but yet it's very applicable. Then it's very applicable today. And here's what it shows on here. That is, the one is attended with painful consequences, the other with pleasure. Well, the world will tell you they're the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Okay? But it's not. And Yahweh's law, for those who obey Yahweh's law, this is what it says, that the sin is the sweet, or the sin is the virtue and the was pleasurable and the, I'm saying it wrong here, I'm sorry. Sin is the bitter, and the righteousness is the sweetness of this. And the world will tell us the exact opposite of that. So, anybody knows what this is?
Cockpit.
That is an F-22 cockpit. Okay? And so, the sharing I'm doing here, this is basically, it's stability in a turbulent world, okay? And that's what we're looking at. Now, what's interesting about this here is that the cockpit, everything is basically digitized in this cockpit. It was one of the first planes that they came out with. Most of the other fighter planes, the pilot could fly without the help of the aircraft. This airplane broke that mold. It is absolutely impossible for the pilot to fly this airplane without the help of the airplane. It has so many inputs that are coming in thousands per second to keep this plane flying. Now, the significance of that is this. If you take a Piper Cub, you can push the yoke down, okay, and let go, and basically it will slowly stable itself back out. No help, it'll kind of level itself out.
The Piper Cub is a small airplane?
Yeah, it's a very small single-engine airplane that you see flying around, okay? They're not very maneuverable, though. They're not high-maneuverable airplanes. By taking away the pilot's ability and the plane to be stable, to make the plane less stable, the plane is highly, highly maneuverable. Okay? But it takes, if they lose power on this airplane and they can't get things running, pilot ejects. You cannot fly it. There's so much stability that comes with this airplane. So it's a really unique thing with it, but it makes it so maneuverable. I mean, it can, the only limitation is the pilot that's flying it, what he can withstand. That's it. How much he can withstand as far as G-factor. That's what takes it. Yeah, it's crazy. It's incredible. But you look in there and you see all the stuff with it. And you're like going, okay, so let's put this relevant to us, okay, for what we're looking at. For us, how do we remain stable? What are the things? So as we look into an airplane, you have safety gear. Okay? Safety gear is the things the pilot's wearing, a flight suit to keep the fire from him, wearing gloves, wearing an oxygen mask. Okay, they normally, when they go into battle, they depressurize the airplane. So they're flying, their body will sense when they head straight up, when they head straight down, they are feeling every bit of it. It's an unpressurized cockpit, which means the force on the pilot is incredible. So they're ready to do that, and the reason is if they have to evacuate the airplane, if they have to pull to eject out of it, if the airplane's pressurized, it's too much force. It has enough force to blow itself off to get the canopy off, but that's why they do it. The safety gear to protect the pilot. And so as we're looking this for the stability for ourselves, what's our safety gear? Okay, what would you think? What would be a safety gear thing for a believer?
Speaking in tongues?
Yeah. Speaking in tongues, having the word, having things that we know, documents, manuals, things that we have, things that we know. We can't just step into the airplane and start flying it. Okay? We can't just step into battle without knowing what we have and what capabilities we have. Timely inputs. Okay, the inputs of the airplane, if the pilot gets drastically behind this, the airplane will fully take over. It will control the flight. No battle at that time, by the way. If the pilot's engaged in battle and he is messing up so bad that the airplane takes over, out of battle until the pilot can get back into the game again. Okay, so timely inputs. It's for us as well. When we see somebody, timely inputs for a believer is, we see somebody screwing up. Hey, before you get too far out of control here, let's get ourselves back together. Guidance assistance. This would be the all the computers are in there. It would be air traffic control. It would be all these different types of things. And so the applicability of a believer, I see so much in there when I look at, because obviously airplanes are things that I'm very familiar with, and I see so many things that cross over as a believer. That, hey, same things. These are high-tech things that we're working with. Gauges and instruments, okay? Those are also the things that you look at where, all right, how have I been the last year? What have I done? Where am I at? We're checking ourselves to see if all of a sudden this is getting, I keep getting too hot. I keep getting too pissed off at something, okay? No different than the plane. You run something for too hot for too long, something's going to break. Something's not going to go right, okay? And then it may divert you your mission because, oh, we got a problem. We have to do something different. So it's no different for us to be checking ourselves, engaging ourselves. In the hot zone, when you get into battle, okay, when you get into battle, for the pilots, it is absolutely, these guys, they're incredible, these fighter pilots. It's a completely different, they become one with the airplane, and there is no other thoughts except what they are doing at that time. And so I think about that for us, when we're in the hot zone, when we're in battle, okay, this is the hot zone. Can't be messing around with other stuff. Oh, cell phone's coming in. Oh, hang on. We've got to focus and just laser beam, you know, put the weapon right where it needs to go to cut the head right off of the beast or what is attacking us. That's the hot zone. Weapons check, obviously. If we don't know what our weapons are, if we don't know what we have available to us, the armor, everything else, then we're going to come up short. And the adversary will trick us. The adversary will convince you, who are you to come up against me? Okay? And you're like going, son of God, I am the heir and fellow brother of Christ. Okay? Which I think you submit to and you're going to submit to. Last ditch options. Okay? Last ditch options. Before a plane goes down, what do we have? Well, that big yellow handle there that you see down there, you pull that, it blows the canopy off, and it shoots you out. Okay, it shoots you out at a 9G force level. Okay? 9Gs. In the Air Force, back in the day, now they're allowing more than once. Back in the day, if a fighter pilot ejected from an airplane, he was down on a fighter plane. Couldn't do it again. Because they were so terrified that if he ever had to do it again, it could cause permanent damage to him. So it's intense what they do. Well, it's kind of cool. I listened to this series here real recently. It was called Apollo 11, and it was called What We Saw. And it was Bill Whittle, which was one of the astronauts, and he told the whole story through everything. But one of them he told, which is kind of cool, was about Neil Armstrong. And Neil Armstrong, when he got into a flat spin. So a flat spin for an airplane is, you are not flying, you are spinning horizontally. And you can't push up the power because it could possibly put you into a faster spin. And normally at that point, as soon as you go into flat spin, if you can't nose the aircraft over and your instrument, as you're flying, every time you put it in a position to it, it only lasts for a split second, and then it reverses and does the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And so it's completely backwards flying. Well, Neil Armstrong, when he got into flat spin, he said that the two options, bail out or make it worse than it already is. And he had a theory. And he flipped his airplane upside down in this flat spin. He was able to maneuver it. Now, you eject. It shoots you down really hard and your parachute automatically inflates. Okay? At 14,000 feet, it inflates. So, yes, it inflates, and you just pray that this falling thing that's coming down on top of you, that's pretty dangerous to get ejected downward, by the way, as well. So, he did. He figured, in order to save this, I have to make this predicament even worse to do it. And he did. He flipped it upside down and ejected from it. And I'm like, well, that just absolutely boggles me that they could do that. He was a pretty cool guy, too. Side note on that. The Apollo 11 was the only mission that they had that they didn't put the names of the astronauts on the patch. And that was his picking. He knew he'd be the first man on the moon, okay? And he didn't want it to be about him. He wanted to be about everybody. And Apollo 10, this is also kind of a cool side note. Apollo 10's mission was to load up with all the equipment that was going to go on to the moon and fly around the moon, get into the orbit of the moon and come back. Okay? They had everything they needed to land on the moon. Everything. This was the test run. NASA was so fearful that these guys would disobey orders that they cut their fuel short so that they would not be able to do it. Okay? They would not be able to land on the moon and make it back. And they did that because of the fact that this is a test run and we don't want you breaking these. But all these missions as they went through it, the heroics, the things that took place, not a single man has died in outer space. There's been some that died on reentry or on takeoff, but none have died in outer space, which is absolutely just bizarre. But that's because of all the stuff that they do and the checking and the preparation and the smartness of these guys, how quick they were to be able to react. And that's the way we can be as well as believers in the same kind of thing. So zombification, I kind of thought this was kind of funny. I'm a zombie movie freak. And I know they're silly and whatnot, except for World War Z. Okay, but zombie movies are silly. They're absolutely silly. But it always made me laugh. But in dictionary.com, okay, here's what it says. The body of a dead person given the semblance of life, but mute and willless, by a supernatural force, usually for some evil purpose. And I think to myself, how many people you walk around going, you know, and I'm like, well, yes, that's kind of funny idea. In order to become a zombie, you have to surrender your will. Once you surrender your will to evil, then evil controls you. That's in the zombie manual, okay? So that's what happens for somebody to get that zombification. But I see that where we should be fighting against this, to where we're going through the mundane, everything day in, day out, day in, day out. And we are pushing ourselves to what? To be telios. To push ourselves to that point where we are always striving forward. Pushing ourselves forward. Again, the zombies, nothing makes you happy, sad, no joy, just going through the motions. So here's a quick search on Google. How many genders are there? Okay? There are more than two genders. Do you see the, do you see where that's coming from?
Teen
Talk. Great. This is number one search. I just pushed this in, hit enter, and copied the page. Also, you look down here, what are the four genders? Scroll down a little bit farther, and it will tell you that Facebook has 58 that you can use, but there's actually 64. Okay? What kind of garbage is this? And yet it's to the point now where their teachers are being fired for not accepting this and putting up with this. And so we're creating new normals and new facts that go against Yahweh. This is the zombification of people that's being pushed into. Let's flip over here to Matthew, page 32. Matthew 27:16-23. If I can get somebody to read that for me too, please.
Sure, I will. Now they had at that time a distinguished prisoner called Barabbas. They, therefore, having come together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will ye I should release unto you? Barabbas or Yehoshua, who is called the Mashiach? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him up. And as he was sitting upon the judgment seat, his wife said unto him, saying, Have thou nothing to do with this righteous man, or that righteous man? For many things have I suffered this day by dreams because of him. But the high priest and the elders persuaded the multitudes that they should claim Barabbas, but Yehoshua should destroy. Now the governor answering said to him, Which of the two desire ye I should release unto you? And they said, Barabbas. Pilate said unto them, What then shall I do unto Yehoshua, who is called Mashiach? They all saying, Let him be crucified. But he said, Indeed, what evil hath he done? But they vehemently were crying out, saying, Let him be crucified.
And so this is what Christ is up against. It's what all believers are up against. Unless you submit and subject to what the direction the world is going and just go downstream with them, this is what we're against. This is what Christ was against. Okay, Matthew 24, back it up just a couple pages. 24:24
reminds me of the fake news of Donald Trump.
Crucify him.
Crucify. Yeah. What really should we do with them? Yeah, it doesn't matter about right or wrong. It doesn't make any difference. Okay, 24:24. For there will arise false Christs and false prophets, and they will show great signs and wonders, so that if possible, even the chosen should be deceived. Okay? And that's where we have to look at that. And so, you know, when you think about that being deceived, how have I been deceived? How has anybody been deceived? And then if you think to yourself, well, I haven't been deceived, that should probably be a good point to be like going, okay, something's going on. And to be ready for that, and how do we know when we're being deceived? Okay, well, if you were born hundreds of years ago and people taught you that the earth was flat, okay, no big deal. It's what's being taught, what's being pushed. It's a constant grab to take away from what's righteous and push away, and our grab to hold on to righteousness and to teach and train up in righteousness and be prepared in righteousness. And again, the two oppose each other. So here's another one here. This is just another quick search. I did a search here for a list of Christian denominations affirming the LGBT and all the other letters that go with that now too. Okay? This isn't to pick out any one or another. This is North America and it's alphabetized. Okay? There are over 50. Okay, that are doing this. How many were there 20 years ago? Yeah, one, maybe two? Very, very few. Okay, this is happening and what's taking place. And now what's taking place is you see what's happened in Canada? You get thrown in jail if you teach against this. Okay, so I expect to see that with... I think in some states it's already starting to happen. And they tried to do this in Texas. Texas, one of the... I think it was in San Antonio. They wanted to know what the preachers were teaching about. And they were demanding that all the preachers send in their what they were teaching about. And they all got together and they all sent a Bible, each one of them. So this is what we're teaching right here. You know, and I'm just like, good. How good is that? But that's small fries, what we're getting ready to get into. That's the entry, you know, the little kicking back and forth at each other. The battles are coming that we have to be ready to stand against. Let's go to Ezekiel. Page 810, chapter 22, verses 26 through 28. Okay, and I'll read these here on page 810, bottom right, 26 through 28. Her priests have done violence to my law and have profaned my holy things. Between the hallowed and the common have they put no difference, and between the unclean and clean have they not taught men to discern. And from the Sabbaths have they hid their eyes, so that I have been profaned in their midst. Her rulers with her have been like wolves rending prey and shedding blood and destroying lives for the sakes of getting dishonest gain. Okay, and I'm like, when this is in Ezekiel, and you see this now, where we don't want to talk about it. Oh, it can, you know, I think about that for a church, how tough that would be for a church. You know, you got a mega church, and you got big bills, and man, to talk against that might sacrifice our money. And yet, what's it saying right there? For the sake of getting dishonest gain. Okay, and I'm like, going, man, that's tough, but it's going to get tougher. We're going through things that we have to be prepared. Tainting the truth. So here we go, back to the airplane things. Okay? So when we start looking at this, how much is okay? So when you look at an airplane, how much ice on the wings is okay? Okay? You know how the ice is taken off the wings? Hot exhaust is channeled through. If you ever look on an airplane, it's that silver on the front of it, okay? It's metal. It channels hot air in those. It knocks that ice off. If you knock it off the leading edge, normally the ice will all come off of it. No ice is acceptable on the wings of an airplane. It changes the shape of the wing, and it's also a ton of weight that the aircraft's not designed to hold, okay? So no ice. How about watering with the fuel? How much is okay? Okay, very, very minimal, very minimal. And so how much for the pilot to be drinking before he goes flying? How much weather are you allowed to go into? You know, how much of your instrumentation can you get up and go fly without? Okay, all these things, how much will I accept? And so when we're sitting there and we're bargaining with, well, this would be okay, that's where we have to look at it and say, how much, and I heard somebody say that they were talking about immigrants coming here and of the possibility of them being terrorists. They said, oh, it's so small. It's such a small percentage. And I heard somebody say that. He goes, well, if you had a jelly bean bowl, a fish bowl filled with jelly beans, and three of those were laced with cyanide, would you stick your hand in there and eat out of that? And I'm like, well, because that's the percentage we're talking about. Is any okay in there? No. Well, I think one jelly bean's okay. No, none of it is. None of that is okay, and that's what we're referring to. And when we're putting it to where we're looking at that, how much sin is okay, we have to have the same kind of thing. How much cyanide am I willing to ingest with this? And that's what we're doing. It's a death to us. Okay, so let's go to Ecclesiastes, page 641, chapter 10. Chapter 10, verse 1. Who would read that for me?
I can.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Dead flies cause to stink. And ferment the oil of the perfumer. More constantly than wisdom or honor is a little fault.
Okay, now look here under the dead flies and see what that note is with A. Go down and read what that says, Melania.
Flies of death.
Keep going.
Dead dash OG others. Dead flies, death bringing poisonous.
Yes, death bringing and poisonous. Okay? This is what we're referring to. Dead flies cause to sting. And what does it say? More costly than wisdom or honor is a little folly. Well, how much is a little folly? I don't know. How much is it? How much is it? How much folly are we going to allow before it starts to disrupt and cause problems? When I worked on the B-52s, we had one night where one came back in, and they said it had multiple engine shutdown. Well, I'm like, well, it's got eight. I mean, you know, okay, what's going on with it? Now, eight engines on that airplane, three are shut down. Not bad. There's five engines still left, unless three of those are all on the same side. And if three of those engines are on the same side, it's not going to fly. And you know what happened? Somebody had not changed the filters on there, and the fuel that went through there clogged up and it shut three of the engines down. Fortunately, it was two on one and one on the other side. Airplane came back. We all kind of laughed when we're listening, like, when multiple engines. And, you know, you hear that on any other plane, yeah, they're going to crash somewhere. You can't fly. But this is it. And so a little bit, how much is that little, and what is that little able to do? And that's where we fight against that little bit, not to assign to take the little. So you remember this here? A little? A tad? You know, we backtracked a little. Tad. Okay? And that's it. Kind of a humor thing with that. But that's exactly it. Those little mistakes make a big impression. So let's go to Isaiah 33, page 677. All right. 677. Okay. 5 and 6 of chapter 33. Okay? And I'll read these here. Exalted is Yahweh, for he inhabiteth the height. He hath filled Zion with justice and righteousness. So shall a wealth of deliverance, wisdom, and knowledge become the stability of the times. The reverence of Yahweh the same as his treasure. So the stability, okay, the stability is what? Wisdom and knowledge. Okay? Without wisdom and knowledge, you are going to have turbulent, unstable times. Only ways to get wisdom and knowledge is through the book and through prayer and through teaching and through learning. But without that, if we ever think that, well, we've got enough, you know, the pilots that used to fly the old fighters, the old like P-51s, those guys could not just switch from there and jump right into an F-22. Now, they pick it up a lot faster than anyone else like myself would, but that still, there's so many differences with it and so much more manuals to go through. So that's where we kind of look at it. And I'll go ahead and stop there. All right, and I have a word here. Yahweh, we thank you for what you've given to us. Thank you for us to be standing bold, to be ready to be engaged. We thank you for that. Thank you for the words that you give, and all this through your Son's name, Christ Jesus. My children, stand fast and firm, knowing that the things that I have promised, the things that I have witnessed to you and shown to you, that of these things, that these things are going to be made manifest, and not to be tempered down or to be withered down as rust comes upon steel, but to be shaving these things off, to be walking out in faith, knowing and claiming, and to be thanking me for what you have not seen that I've promised, knowing that these things are coming. Amen.